Senator Daschle, thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure, Jackie. Good to be with you.
The big idea in your book is the creation of a Federal Reserve Board type organization that would create and maintain a healthcare system for the country. How would it work?
Well, it would work much like the Federal Reserve Board does today. It's not, the Federal Reserve Board is not the manager of our federal system. What it is the executor, the decision maker, the policy setting framework within which most of the managerial decisions are ultimately made. We've seen with the crisis over the last couple of weeks in our financial markets just what an incredible role that they play. We need the same kind of autonomy, the same kind of political insulation, the same kind of expertise when it comes to health care. Because unlike the popular perception, we don't have just a private system in our country. We have a public-private system. 45% of the people in this country today get their health care from a government program, 55% from the public sector, and so from the private sector. So you have to have better integration of that than we have today. That's what the Federal Reserve Board does, integrating our public-private systems within banking. I believe that's what a Federal Health Board could do with our health care system.
Well, give us some examples of what kinds of decisions they would be making.
Well, they would start by creating a framework within which decisions involving best practices could be decided. Decisions involving greater emphasis on prevention could be considered. Decisions involving whether or not we could set up a federal health court to deal with malpractice issues in the future. That kind of decision making, putting greater emphasis on management of the chronic care problems that we have in this country today. But all of those decisions today are largely relegated to Congress. Congress sets some decision making with regard to many of these things, at least on the public side. And the bottom line is most of them never get made or get made well after the fact. Congress is just not capable of being the manager of a health care system. And yet it's largely Congress today that has that responsibility. It hasn't worked for the last 50 years. It'll work even less in the next 50.
Would the board get down to the nitty-gritty? And by that I mean, for example, would they issue formularies?
Well, I want to make sure I clarify that I don't see the board addressing the private side. What we would do is create an FEHB-like system where everybody would have access to a cafeteria of different
that's
opportunities. Federal employee health benefits program. They could go buy a private system, or they could buy a public health care plan. They would have that option. The Federal Health Board would regulate all the 45%, the public side of things, and have the same impact, just like the Fed provides its decision-making with the federal discount rate, not a private rate, a public rate. That has the effect in our banking system of having dramatic consequences on the private side. The same would be true of this. Everybody would be in it. Everybody would have access. We would have a requirement that everybody take their own responsibility. But at the end of the day, it would be the management of that 45% today. I think it's probably going to grow as the baby boomers get older. But nonetheless, you're going to see the Fed take responsibility for that, and formularies could be part of it.
But your thought is that they're involved in the 45%, but because that's such a large number, it would have the spillover effect into the 55%.
Exactly. And there would be a competitive opportunity. People could sign up, could have access to either a public program like Medicare or a private program like any one of a number of the private programs offered today.
In the book, you compare this idea to the British and German agencies. And as you know, there is criticism sometimes of those systems that what these organizations do is lead to rationing. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think we have to recognize that there will always be decisions involving the allocation of our resources. Rationing is such a harsh word, but it is a word. We ration badly today, and no one knows that better than you and Kaiser. We ration on the basis of ability to pay. We ration on the basis of your own eligibility because of a pre-existing condition. We ration on the basis, in part, of whether or not you live in a poor rural part of the country, like many counties in South Dakota. We ration, in my view, in the most unfortunate way today. So what I'm hoping is we can move away from that kind of terrible rationing to decisions with regard to the allocation of resources that make a lot more sense.
In the Wall Street Journal reviewed the book, and the writer made this argument that the Federal Reserve Board has a far simpler mandate than what the Daschle Board would have. And then he asks, how can a single health board make so many decisions, and wisely?
Well, first of all, it is a very good question, and my answer would be, as I said a moment ago, I think that the Federal Health Board's responsibility would largely be helping to create the framework and making basic decisions with regard to that overall framework, just as the Federal Reserve Board does today. But I don't relegate all of the other managerial decisions to the Federal Health Board. That would still fall within the purview of the public and private entities. They still would have to make a lot of the executive and managerial decisions. It's the framework and the overall executive decision-making within that framework, the larger framework that I see the Federal Health Board making.
Does it lead to lower costs?
Well, if we don't get lower costs, we failed. And I think that it is essential that we bring down costs, at least the growth of costs. And I think there are a lot of things we can do to do that. We shouldn't tolerate 30 cents on the dollar for the management of our system today, but we are. I don't think we should accept the fact that we only spend 3% of our $2.3 trillion on wellness and prevention. But today, and for the last 80 years, we have. I think there are so many decisions we could make with regard to the management of our care, chronic care in particular, that could bring down costs, including the utilization across the board of best practices. But there are so many things that could be done that are cost sensitive, that can address some of these issues. There's too much cost shifting in our system today. The uninsured cost the average family about $1,500. And so by having everybody insured, you're going to end some of that cost shifting, and that too could have an effect.
And you also talked about the one hallmark of this board would be its transparency, and that in itself would lead to reduced costs, reduced spending.
Our health system has been described as the most opaque, the least transparent of all of the sectors of our economy today. And I find that amazingly ironic that which affects us most personally, our own health, is that which we know the least amount about. And I think we have to change that. We have to become more transparent, not only at the board level, but all the way through the system.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you believe it's essential that everyone be covered. I don't think you've used the word mandate, but that's what it is. And mandate, like ration, is a word that scares a lot of Americans. What is your thinking, though, behind that point that everyone must be covered?
Well, in this country, we value our freedom, but I think along with the right to be free and the right to, at least the moral right, if not the legal right, to have health care, comes a fundamental responsibility. And that responsibility is at least to help keep yourself healthy and to make yourself responsible for at least part, subject, of course, to the ability to pay, of the health costs involved with keeping you healthy. It isn't fair to say, I'm going to put that responsibility on somebody else. That's what a lot of people today are doing, especially young people. So I'm not one who believes that an individual responsibility requirement, just as we have for auto insurance today, if you drive a car, is going to cover automatically everybody who ought to be covered. I think there has to be a corresponding willingness on the part of our country to help those who can't afford that responsibility on their own. So it has to be a combination, helping those who can't afford it, but requiring of all of us, where we can, to pay at least our fair share.
So you have a working woman. She makes too much to qualify for Medicaid, but she can't afford health insurance. Under your plan, what happens to her?
Under my plan, she's required. She would be required to have some form of health insurance. She could choose. But up to perhaps 400% of poverty, she would be eligible for assistance from the government to assure that she could buy the plan of her choice. I know you've probably followed this and talked about it on some of your programs. The alternative today is what we're seeing in Oregon, where Oregon, for that woman, subjects herself to a lottery.
Right.
And she, if she's lucky, wins the lottery to get a health plan. I don't want to see that spread across the country. That's not the way to cover people.
And still using this woman in her workplace, if her employer, we presume, is not offering insurance, what would that employer have to do under the Daschle plan?
Well, I'd like to see, and this would be a matter that I would leave to the Federal Health Board. I don't want to get too far into the weeds with regard to how we make these managerial or executive decisions. But my preference would be that the employer contribute something as well. It is part of one's compensation package, retirement, health, and livelihood. That, to me, is just a fundamental tradition and economic fact that employers and employees come together, recognizing that an employee's health is in the interest of the employer as well. To have a person stay well is something employers are recognizing to a far greater degree than ever before with the acquisition of health equipment and health rooms and better diets and an emphasis on wellness that we see with employers all over the country.
They would either have to provide insurance or pay into a pool.
Correct.
Right. Some of your ideas are playing themselves out in Massachusetts since that state passed reform. Do you see anything in the Massachusetts experience yet that tells you whether these ideas are still, as you thought they would be, good ones?
Well, I believe that the connector idea is really the Massachusetts version of a federal health board. I like a lot of what the connector is all about. It basically creates that framework and works to try to set in place the infrastructure that Massachusetts is using. I also like this individual responsibility requirement that they've passed and the idea that employers would contribute. Now, obviously, they're going through growing pains. They're going to have to do a lot to try to resolve many of the challenges they're facing, but we would expect that. I think it would be a mistake for us, in any case, to anticipate that we're going to solve all these problems within a year or 2 years. This is going to be a gradual period, and I think it's going to take some time to evolve into where it is we want ultimately to be. And with that time, we're going to see greater and greater results. That, in my view, is what the Massachusetts experience will show.
I know you've been asked to talk about this before, and I ask you to talk about it again today. You're the co-chair of the Obama campaign. He calls for a mandate on kids only. Hillary Clinton calls for the individual mandate closer to your plan.
Well, that's right. And Barack and I have talked about it. I believe that Barack is right, too. What Barack is saying is that mandates don't work unless people have the capacity to fulfill that mandate. And we have a large percentage of the American people who are not eligible for Medicaid, but not capable of buying health insurance. Even those we know from studies that have been done, we know that 37 or 40% of the people who have insurance still can't afford health care. So we've got to find ways to address the economics of health just as we do the legal requirements of health. And that's really where I see common ground between Hillary and Barack. Hillary says it ought to be a responsibility. Barack believes that as well, but he thinks it ought to be with the help of the American people, because we really are in this together.
I have a final question. You spend a lot of time in this book analyzing what's gone wrong in past attempts at health care reform and how do you create the right political climate for success. I guess I would ask you, looking forward, and I know it's hard in this moment, but what are the chances of some changes, not necessarily yours, but some changes occurring?
Well, I would put it in the on a spectrum of time. In the short term, I would say the chances are not very good. In the longer term, I don't think we can avoid having to confront these issues in a very meaningful way. What happens in our republic historically is that one of two factors usually drive large change. We either see it through crisis or we see it through leadership. Sometimes we see it through both. This could be crisis-driven in the very near future. I'm hoping that it will be leadership-driven, that within the next few years, perhaps as early as this time next year, we could actually begin a debate, a national debate, about how we make our healthcare system better.
At the moment when we're talking, which is mid-March of 2008, the economy is in a great deal of turmoil. When that happens, doesn't it make having a conversation about such a large, important, complicated subject like this even more difficult?
I think it does, but I think this is wedded in so many ways to the state of our economy. You know, when General Motors spends more on health than they do on steel, and Starbucks more on health than they do on coffee, and when we spend a far greater percentage of the cost of each car on health than our competitors, this becomes a huge competitive question. And it becomes a question for families. Can they make ends meet financially? That becomes a major economic question for so many families and businesses today. So this is very intricately connected to the whole economic issue. So in some ways, it actually helps us.
Okay. Thank you so much, Senator Tom Daschle, author of Critical.
My pleasure.
You.